This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. Coming up, the secrets to picking the NCAA basketball winner. Let's just say it involves the numbers 12 and 5. But first, a Utah woman who is accused of murdering her unborn child because she refused to get a C-section is in court today on a related charge. Melissa Ann Rowland refused to deliver her twin babies by cesarean section despite repeated warnings by doctors that the surgery was necessary to save the twins' lives. Rowland's baby boy died. The surviving twin, a girl, was found to have cocaine and alcohol in her system. She has since been adopted, and Rowland faces child endangerment charges in that case today. She has pleaded not guilty to murdering her son. Joining us to discuss a case with implications for the abortion debate is Slate and Day to Day's legal analyst, Dahlia Lithwick. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi, Madeline.
First, tell us a little more about this case and the specific charges against Melissa Ann Rowland.
The charges she's facing, as you've pointed out, the important ones are obviously, first and foremost, the murder charge, which is a felony criminal homicide charge for refusing to have the C-section. Then there's a child endangerment charge. The hearing will be today, and that involves the cocaine and alcohol found in the blood of the surviving twin. And now there's possible charges that may be pending that have to do with allegations that she may have tried to sell that surviving baby girl in order to make bail. I should add that she's denying all those charges.
Now, she doesn't come across as a particularly sympathetic character. Prosecutors have said that she wanted to avoid the C-section because she didn't want to be scarred. But feminists have rallied around her, saying that basically it's a short hop from charging a woman who refused to have a C-section to charging a woman who smokes or drinks during her pregnancy. Does that ring true to you? Is that a slippery slope for you?
Yes, I think there is a sort of dangerous slippery slope, and it's probably better to sort of frame the case that way. It's important to understand that the legal precedent comes down squarely against these murder charges. In America, nobody can be forced to, you know, accept on themselves invasive bodily surgeries in order to save another life. And that's even been clear in cases where, for instance, parents cannot be forced to donate a kidney or bone marrow or blood to their own child. You know, one might hope that they would do that, but the law is very clear that you cannot be forced to sort of subordinate your own bodily integrity for someone else's. And this case really would upend that. And so I think feminists may be, you know, using extreme examples when they talk about mothers who will be jailed for smoking during pregnancy. But I think the principle is correct, which is that this would really subvert the legal regime in this country that says that mothers are not forced to make choices about their unborn children that would, you know, subject them to invasive surgeries that they don't want.
Now, in this case, the woman may be mentally ill. Would that change the dynamics? Would that therefore mean that she doesn't have as much right over her body?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, certainly we don't know very much about her history of mental illness. We know what she's told her attorney. What she's told her attorney is pretty grim. You know, she's been in and out of psychiatric hospitals. That started when she was 12. She's had two suicide attempts. She's been diagnosed allegedly as having bipolar disorder. We know she has a problem with drug abuse. And we know that she lost custody of a prior daughter in a beating incident that happened in a store. So obviously, you know, if she's mentally ill, she's going to have to show that she was so mentally ill that she didn't know right from wrong in order to prevail on an insanity claim. But more importantly, I think it really raises questions about the duty of the hospital in this case. And that's something we haven't really talked about too much in the media, but it's really, I think, a very profound shift to say that nobody's responsible for this, for the welfare of this baby, not the hospital, not social services, but the mother is solely responsible. And when she makes a choice that we don't like, we're going to accuse her of murder.
And how does abortion fit in with this case?
Certainly this case is sort of getting everybody, all the same groups, ramped up about the implications for abortion rights that one would usually expect. So you have the National Organization for Women now, who are, you know, an abortion rights group, who are very, very loudly claiming that this case is really going to set precedent for the first time about privileging the rights of a fetus, of an unborn fetus, over a mother, and how dangerous and pernicious that is. And you also have them arguing that, you know, this is part of this sort of tsunami wave of new state efforts to call a fetus viable and as a human being earlier and earlier and earlier in the process. And so it's sort of an attempt to cut back at Roe v. Wade, which said, you know, you're simply not a human being with full rights until you're born. And this is yet another attempt to say, oh, yes, you're very much a human being. And in fact, you know, murder charges can be filed if you're endangered. So I think it does raise all the sort of red flags for the abortion debate that we've been hearing for the last 30 years.
Opinion and analysis from Dahlia Lithwick, who writes the jurisprudence column for Slate. Thanks so much, Dahlia.
My pleasure, Madeline.
This is Day to Day from NPR News.